Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 802. Hey, I have a comedy special that's airing this weekend on Comedy Central, you guys.
What?
What? Fun Comfortable is airing Saturday at 10 p.m. on Comedy Central, and then it comes out. It's available for purchase next week, but here's what I'm going to do. So this is going to – if you skip through the intros to get to the podcast, then I guess it's your fault if you don't find out about this because I'm telling you right now. So here's what I want to do. The special that's airing Saturday, the special itself is an hour 15. What's airing for television on Saturday is a 50-minute version for television. Mm-hmm. What's going to be for sale next Tuesday, May 3rd is the full hour and 15-minute show. So months ago, I said to Comedy Central, like, oh, can I just put the special out as an audio, as a podcast? Can I just put it out as an episode of the podcast? And they were like, well,
what's a podcast?
No, they knew what a podcast was. And they were actually really cool about it. And they just said, well, you know, how about this? We'll let you put out, like, the 50-minute version on the podcast. So this will be a – because ultimately – you know, I want people to kind of have a try before you buy kind of a situation. And I know that, you know, if money's tight for people, I wouldn't want that to restrict them from getting, you know, the show.
That's super cool.
If they can't watch it. And so I'm gonna put it out as a podcast next week. But if you want the so here's what I would ask. If you listen and you like it and you want to support it, yes, it would be helpful if you went and bought the hour and 15-minute version.
Uncut special.
Or if you hear the 50-ish minute version and you want a full special, the hour and 15-minute version also has some extras as well. Some we did a Q&A.
Oh, nice.
And then we also, yeah, we did some other stuff. So, and the show's an hour and 15 minutes long. But if you listen to it, you don't like it, no worries. You didn't waste any money. And, you know, all you wasted was 50 minutes of your time. And so.
I just hope this leads to a long Blade Runner style, which is the real ending version of your new special. Wait,
I
so
know.
Was Chris a man?
Was he? Oh, you son of a bitch. You know, people were asking me, like, I thought the next special was going to be called Son of Mandroid. I'm like, no, that's what Kyle Clark said. That's not a real thing.
It's still coming soon. It doesn't have to be the second one in a row.
Yeah. So so the special, if you watch it on Saturday, April 30th at 10 p.m. on Comedy Central, and then it'll be available for sale, the full version, on iTunes on Tuesday, May 3rd, and then also the podcast that day. I'm going to put it out. And I think as part of the deal, I'm only allowed to put it out for like a couple weeks, maybe a week or two.
Get on that
shit,
everybody.
Yeah, so it's a limited thing. That's just sort of what they're, you know, I said, please let me do this. And
are you going to number that or give it a fun, like, symbol instead so it doesn't confuse completionists later?
Like Wingding.
Oh, my
God. Wingdings. Wingdings.
Episode number Wingding. Episode number Wingding. Yeah. So there you go. So that's all that. And hopefully this didn't come off too salesy or begging you
to
download
giving
my
them
special.
More free shit.
I know, but I just...
Ugh, he took so much time to explain how he's broing down and giving me a free version
it's
of a
more,
thing.
You know, it's more important to me that more people hear it.
Yeah.
Because the more people hear it, the more people come out. I want people to come to live shows because I like doing stand-up for people. So, you know, and if you want to go buy it to support, then I appreciate that. That is helpful with the Comedy Central. My goal is that I just want some people to hear it. So listen to it. If you like it, share it, you know, whatever. And I hope you enjoy it. It was very personal to me. This one was very personal. It was built around Mike Birbiglia was on the podcast a few years back. And I'm like, where do you write from? And he goes, I go to this place where I'm really uncomfortable, and that's where I write from. And
like
so,
a closet?
No. Like an Iron Maiden?
Yeah.
No, and so that's why the special is called Fun Comfortable, because I started writing really personal. My previous special, Mandroid.
You wrote all the material in
which I can't watch anymore. But it just doesn't feel as personal to me. And this one is very personal stories that I probably should be embarrassed to say in public. And so that's why it's called Fun Comfortable. So it's a completely different vibe. And, you know, and honestly, I'm nervous about it because it's so personal that
you have
if people
to embrace
are like,
it.
Like
you have to embrace
like,
it.
On your last special, you're like, and then I jerked off. And then this time, you're like, and then I jerked off and cried about it.
Yeah, exactly. And here's why. Here's what I was jerking off to, and here's why I was crying.
God, now I want nothing more than to find out that your hour special opens with, so I'm jerking off, and then some terrible things happen.
It's not that far off.
Oh, I'm intimately familiar with how your stand-up works at this point, so I have seen behind the curtain.
You're going to be very satisfied. Well, a lot of it was kind of dealing with my dad dying. And just being able to use comedy to sort of deal with that. Mm. And also, you know, my dad loved it when I talked about him on stage.
For 5 microseconds, it was like, my dad loved when I talked about jerking off.
Loved it.
He would just have me sit down in the middle of the room and just be like, Chris, tell me about it again.
Hey, he's dead. Stop it. But you know, it's so it is like it like I said, it's personal, and I'm getting shy about it. So let's go to the Nerdist Community Corkboard to find out what other people have going.
I got a double dose of things. The first one is DePaul University in Chicago. They're having Star Trek Day.
Do what?
There we go. That's I was waiting for that.
Thank you.
It's on Saturday, May 7th. It's free and open to the public. If you go to mcsdepaul.com, they have panels that include Star Trek and the culture of inclusivity, Klingon culture and history, and reevaluating Deep Space Nine, which makes me happy because I feel like that show gets the short end of the stick sometimes, and it's a great series.
Excellent.
The other one I love, it's from Alex N. and also, what's his friend's name here? Come on. And Ray, they are two high school students inspired by the People of New York Instagram. They started the Bathrooms of MHS, and it's just them taking photos of the bathrooms of their high school. I love that these guys are two nerds, listen to Nerdist podcast, going like, we should make a funny thing that will be amusing to us. And as someone who was not unlike these two young gentlemen, I fully support you going to their Instagram at Bathrooms of MHS.
And so,
I want
There's
this Instagram to blow the fuck up. Like, I want them to look at the numbers and go, holy shit, what happened?
We have like 40,000 followers.
And people are just like, sweet bathrooms, bro.
We're out of bathrooms. What do we do? Well, there's this one Instagram account that I like called I Have This Thing With Floors. And it's just really awesome, like intricate floors from around the world.
Oh, that's amazing.
Take a picture of their feet standing on the floors, but they're fucking amazing floors.
That's incredible.
So this could be like a high school bathroom Instagram. I people could just send in their own high school bathroom pictures.
My friend Rob Schultz's official Instagram is just cars being towed in Los Angeles.
Jesus Christ. Fucking internet. I'm glad, though. I'm glad. Katie, do you have anything on the corkboard?
Yes. Martin Starr is doing an art show this Friday, April 29th, at Nerd Melt Theater. And all the proceeds, he is working with this organization called Wolf Connection, which they help inner city kids work with wolves who were abused, and like kind of help each other. It sounds really cool, and all the proceeds from the art will go to the wolves. And so it starts at 7 p.m.
Leaving a pile of money in the forest, like, here you go, wolves.
Well, it's
I just like
the
idea that then you
charity.
See like wolves with like bowler hats and spectacles walking around, like, ooh, these wolves got fancy.
They're just like, are you embezzling? Well, they're wolves.
Goddamn capitalist wolves.
But that is a fantastic cause, by the way. Like, I'm not belittling the cause. I just think the idea of like you saying like wolf. And then they give the money to the wolves.
I met the wolves and the kids, the charity.
We should have thought this through. You can't just Yeah, my grandpa used to say you can't throw money at wolves.
The first couple of wolves were very confused, then just ate the money.
And then the person throwing it at them. Katie, what else?
Well, that's it.
Protect
starts
wolves.
At 7 o'clock. Go to nerdmeltla.com for more information and also find out about all the other awesome shows they have there.
Yeah.
This episode is Nikolai Coster-Waldau, who is promoting a show called Game of Thrones, I believe it's called.
I believe it's
I
Thorns.
Haven't heard of that.
No, I think it's Thrones. Is it Game of Thorns?
What is it about?
I guess it's just it's like a where they just they have chairs fight.
Cool.
They have king chairs.
Like battle
fight.
Bots, but for chairs.
But for
finally,
chairs.
A show for me.
Yeah, for king chairs. I'm kidding. You know, because a lot of people who have never heard of the podcast, who just like Nikolai, are going to listen to this. And
like what a bunch
of fucking
assholes.
Idiots not know about Game of Thrones? It's only the most popular show in the world. Yes, we know about it. We watch it. Nikolai was great. He plays Jaime Lannister, who is, I don't
weird
know, would
seeing
you say
him with
he's
two
chaotic
hands.
Good, or would you say he's
I would say chaotic neutral.
Think
I don't think
chaotic
you can
neutral.
Lean towards good.
Right, you think he's chaotic
I don't know if anybody on that show can lean fully towards chaotic good.
No, probably not. This episode also brought to you by Stamps.com.
Ooh, what's that?
Well, you know what it is because you're on the podcast.
It's a stamp website.
Kyle.
That,
it's a stamp
where
website
like,
where you can print
Because I hate
out.
Going to the post office.
Well, over 600,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a big number. So to get postage right from your desk, you can have it 24 hours whenever you need it. Turns your computer
Wait a minute,
and your
so
printer into a
4:30 a.m. I sit up and go, I need stamps. I don't have to go and find an all-night store that sells stamps.
You know, that story makes me think too much about your life and what you do in the middle of the night.
Well, it's a lot of mailing weird things to people when I first have that impulse to do it and don't question it.
Well, the answer is yes, you
all
could
right.
do that. It's that convenient. focus your time where you want. Grow your business or get up at 4:30 in the morning and mail things to people that don't have anything
sometimes
to do with anything.
Sometimes you're like, you know what? Matt Myra needs a bag of my hair to be sent to his work office.
Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use the promo code Nerdist for this special offer, a four-week trial, including a $110 bonus offer, including a postage and digital scale, and not a bag of my hair. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That is Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 802 with Nikolai Coster-Waldau. From Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones.
Thrones, Game of Thrones. Did you ever hear Anamanaguchi's...
Game of Thrones, Game of fucking Thrones.
Katie, roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Chris is like Bart the Bear.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Park it right there.
Park it right there.
Great.
We're gonna give him whipped cream if he does something really good.
No.
Yeah.
Why was that never an option?
We're talking about the bear on Game of Thrones. And
I was saying it was right next to Seth. It was parked in his trailer or cage. To get it out of the cage, the whole crew had to applaud. Like, hey, Bart! Hey! Slowly it would like... And after each take, you would have to do the same, and it would like, and then it would get whipped cream.
So the bear was that much of a narcissist that it needed to know that it was loved before it would come out.
Before you even performed.
Yeah. I can relate to that. Now we just got to add whipped cream to the equation, like you said, and everything's going to be amazing.
I've been trying for years to add whipped cream to this equation.
I wanted to come to the premiere Sunday night, but I had to work. How was it?
It was fun. It was great. It was big.
It was enormous, I heard.
But the most important part of it was, episode one was just, it was the best episode one so far. It was really cool.
Do you like seeing the show with that many people at one time in a crowd?
Yeah. I mean, I remember, was it last year or the year before, they did like this special IMAX thing for episodes 8, 9, and 10 of season 4. I think it was last year. And I saw that. And it's just amazing how it holds up on the big screen. It really is cinematic, and it's beautiful.
It's like a bunch of movies. Like every episode is a movie, basically.
Yeah. And then sitting, of course, with 1,000 people, how many were in there? It was great.
Were there any laughs in there?
There were some amazing cheers.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were like... I can't tell you, of course.
What? Wait, what?
What?
Why can't you just lay it all out? So what happens at the end of this season, this new season that's coming up? Just 5 minutes.
The last scene is this. It's actually me.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie, he opens this variety show.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. And he has, finally, he comes out in drag.
Yeah.
That's been his dream forever.
The entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he
sings. Does he call it Stumpies? Because I think that'd be a great name.
He doesn't call his Stumpies, okay. but
that's what his dancers are called, though.
That's what exactly.
It's the Lannister Stumpy dancers.
And then he has this beautiful song, very emotional.
You know, people would watch the shit out of that. You're joking. People would watch that.
I would watch it, yeah.
I've
been pitching that every year, but
they still just aren't.
No.
Funny or Die, or a Nerdist, if you will, should produce a Game of Thrones variety, 70s variety show, as though it took place.
It would be great.
That's a fantastic idea. You mean kind of like the Brady Bunch Family Hour type situations?
Yeah, or your Johnny Cash variety or,
right.
Donnie
Marie.
We
did that thing, Coldplay did that. I don't know if you saw that. They did like for this charity, we did a musical version of Game of Thrones. And I think that worked really well. I think there's so much potential.
I think as long as you're all willing to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't see any reason why the world wants it. The world wants
all,
it to
you
happen.
Could do it with all – you could have like a show with all the dead people of Game of Thrones. A variety show with all the dead ones.
So many of them. And the one thing I know is that once an actor's been killed off a show, they definitely want to come back.
Exactly. So I think I don't see any reason why I couldn't. I mean,
they'd figure out a way to have Sean Bean die in that variety show again.
Again, exactly. Oh, yeah. He has to die, but that's in his contract.
Yeah. He has to. I think Sean Bean would have to survive the entire variety show, and then at the end, he'd be like,
scaffolding.
Hey, guys, I made it. And then, like, boom. Something falls yeah. out of the. Yeah, yeah and it. Then, like, takes his head love off, it. And then it's all. And then the credits. It's perfect. It's perfect.
I know.
I actually did not know for a long time that you were Danish. It was your accent work is fantastic.
Well, good. That's good.
It is good.
Yeah.
But then I remembered that I had also seen you in Nightwatch.
Oh, really?
Yes, I loved Nightwatch.
The glory days.
Nightwatch was fucking awesome.
Yeah, that was my first job.
That was your first job?
Yeah. That's a long time ago. They redid it with Ewan McGregor, and then I worked with him on Black Hawk Down, and he made me promise not to watch it. which I had a few that I could, like, add to my list. Okay, well, you don't watch all these, then.
That's so sweet that Ewan McGregor didn't want... He was just like, your version was better, we should just stick with that.
Well, maybe he was just being nice, but I think he didn't have the best experience on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's always weird. The director chose to direct it, the remake himself, and I think that was a mistake. Because then he would just kind of want Ewan McGregor to do what I did, which is a horrible situation to be in as an actor.
Sure.
Where he's kind of showing him. Could you?
I thought we all learned that from Gus Van Sant's Psycho.
That you didn't need to just do a shot-for-shot remake. They did it pretty well the first time.
Yeah. It was okay. Yeah.
The first time. There's a reason.
He does Good Will Hunting.
I know he was a little unknown, that director, but still. It's crazy. Come on.
They're like, you can do anything you want, Gus. And he's like, I want to do a shot-for-shot remake of Psycho.
I mean, that's basically amazing. Just like that's like a director's version of karaoke. You're just
totally
yeah. That's basically.
Well,
all
if
it
you
is.
remake, just do a bad one,
right?
Yeah,
don't do the great ones.
Yeah,
no, remake bad movies.
Yeah, that's
that, like,
okay.
Didn't quite, you know.
No, it didn't. It's a good idea, but we can make this better. But
or oh, like yeah. Zero Hour turned into Airplane.
Yeah, you could totally do that.
Just do that. Do a comedy version of Psycho.
Or let's just start hitting all of the Police Academy sequels. Like let's go in and work there.
I would fucking love if next season of like Bosch.
Are you doing Michael Winslow?
Yeah, remember that. I wanted to learn to do that for so long.
I would watch a procedural that would every episode was the plot of the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth Police Academy movies.
As a procedural.
Was it that many? Amazing. Did they make that
oh,
many?
Oh, there sure were. I think there's a seventh one.
As a comedy or just like as a serious
straight
like they did with
Teen
Wolf?
Yeah. Like Citizens on Patrol, they're going to have to like
they did with Teen Wolf on MTV, basically. Absolutely. Just yeah. But did you?
But then it just becomes Law and Order.
I know, but there could still be a guy that makes those noises with his mouth.
Yeah, I'll be there.
I love that you know Police Academy and Michael Winslow. Because I don't – what – so when you were growing up, like how much of your entertainment consumption in a pre-internet era was Danish-based or even – or how much did you get from like Germany or Sweden or
– Very little. Most of it was American. And you guys, you infect the whole
– We do. We're a virus.
American English. Yeah. American English.
So English is a pretty wide. I mean, you go to Europe and you realize, oh yeah, a lot of people speak multiple languages because it's such a
you have to
in order to communicate.
Yeah.
So
I remember the first show I saw and I remember was American show. At least the one I remember was Soap.
Oh, the best. Yes, Richard Mulligan.
Oh, I loved that.
Yes, but he thought he was invisible.
I know. It's just a great idea.
That show, that's got to be somewhere on the internet, right? Somewhere, Soap must be somewhere.
I think for a little while it was on Amazon Prime. Streaming.
Now that's something I got to go buy. Yeah, you're right. Soap was amazing.
That was amazing.
What was your impression of America before you came?
Oh, first time I came, it was funny. I'd done a short film with a friend who was at the time at the film school. I was at the theater school in Copenhagen. Went out, and we went to New York, and he wanted to kind of – he rented a cinema. Now we were going to get agents. It was all going to happen. But it was amazing. And we were staying with a friend of his right around the corner from Christopher Street. And I remember I was thinking, wow, they're so – everything is so environmentally conscious in this country because there was all these rainbow-colored flags. And I was like, wow. And so many men that are so well-groomed and nice to me. So that was the first thing. And then I remember being really disappointed going to Planet Hollywood. And I saw
Robert, this is not a planet?
I saw Robert De Niro's – oh, was it – Yeah, it was. I think it was Robert De Niro's. It was supposed to be the jacket he wore in Taxi Driver.
Right.
And I was looking at it, and I was like, because I loved that movie, and I was like, that's not the jacket.
You knew that wasn't the jacket.
That's not the jacket.
And it was shots just fired at the Planet Hollywood.
So I was like already there. I was like, wow, really? They would not put up the real one?
So you're saying that, are you saying America is a facade? A lie, perhaps? Yeah, I'm not surprised, actually.
No, but
I think most people would not recognize that who went into Planet Hollywood.
No, probably not. But then, and then what else did I do? I went up inside the Statue of Liberty, which was really cool.
I don't think I've ever done it. Have you ever done that?
Can you do that anymore?
I think you can again.
Okay. I had never done it. No, I've never done it.
I was actually, because my friend is out, the director, he's out here now. We're actually going to do a movie together here. And he, I found these old pictures, and it was kind of, you know, that's, you know, the time has passed when you see that picture of us going back on the boat from you know, the Statue of Liberty, and we're so happy, and just behind us you have the World Trade Center.
Oh, yeah.
It's like so eerie. You go, wow.
Yeah, the world has changed a lot. I mean, immediately changed a lot. And it's also kind of strange to think how long ago that was. How long ago it was. I mean, like 15 years.
Yeah.
But it still feels like, that's...
Well, it's so present.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is I've never been to Denmark. Always wanted to go to Denmark. Mm-hmm. What is the best way to do Denmark if you're going? Is did you go to Copenhagen and just like fan out from there, or is it?
Copenhagen is a great city. You go there in the summer and it's light, you know, until midnight, and then you have 2 hours of darkness, and then the sun comes up. So there's a great, if you like to go out, there's a lot to do.
Yeah,
great bars, great restaurants. People speak your language.
I would try to learn some Danish so I wouldn't be the American who's forcing everyone to speak English.
Well, no, you'd be the American who's speaking poor Danish.
Yeah, I'd be, but at least I'd be trying. I feel like I would get credit. Would you prefer someone try to speak
the language? Always nice. Wherever you go, isn't it? It's nice to just have a few words in the bag, and you got to go, oh, that's nice, you tried.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You butcher my language, but it's a nice, you make an effort.
I did. I tried to speak German when we went to Austria, and then, you know, I would get through a couple the
and
first.
Do you remember anything?
Of course I remember. I remember saying, Ich kann kein Deutsch sprechen.
Yeah. So which basically I don't speak any German.
I don't speak any German right off the bat, which was a little bit endearing of me saying that in the language.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I had some basic stuff down.
And also, don't you find that people like Americans, right?
I don't think so.
No? In Europe? I always find, at least in Denmark, that it's kind of cool to be American there.
I think I kind of thought we were viewed as these, like, these very loud, obnoxious cowboy types who were very America-centric. I didn't find that there were only parts of France and then maybe Venice where I felt like...
You felt the love?
I did not feel the love.
I was going to say, in France, really?
No. In most places, I think it's more like... I sort of felt like a curious, endangered, like an animal that they didn't, you know, like, oh, you're American. That's very interesting. You know, almost like, how adorable, you know? You guys seem like you got some shit to work out. But I didn't really feel, I didn't get the sense of like, look at these Americans. But, you know, why should we get special treatment everywhere? So it didn't really bother me. It was just more like, oh, yeah, we're American and, you know,
yeah,
I hope that's okay and, you know. But I think a lot of us, America is geographically so able to be America-centric that I think a lot of people are conditioned when they go other places. Like, well, why can't they just – why can't they put a McDonald's in the – you know.
Well, they did.
Well, no,
they kind of did. I remember I was in Moscow in 92 and the first McDonald's had opened up. I was at drama school and it was so bizarre because, you know, the whole – Perestroika, Glasnost had just happened.
Right.
Gorbachev was still in power. But there was this one McDonald's that had opened. And it was just terrible because the line of people just went around the block to get into McDonald's.
Oh, my God.
To have a hamburger.
Did you have one?
I did not.
You did not wait in line?
No.
Well, that's like Shake Shack in West Hollywood now.
It's exactly it's like exactly. that. Shake Shack in West Hollywood is exactly like the Glasnost era McDonald's in Moscow in 92.
You think I'm kidding, but if you drive by at any time of day, there's a three-hour line.
Really?
I'm getting nods over here. They agree.
What Thank is this guys. Place? I don't know this place.
Shake Shack is a. It started in New York. It's just a burger fry place, and
it's
they
special.
Finally opened one up on the West Coast. So what
the,
that means is there's an as long as they're open.
All the New Yorkers are going there. It's like, oh,
there is a
home.
Line. It's ridiculous.
But the difference is that those people in Shake Shack have never heard of a fucking Shake Shack before. Like McDonald's in that era in yeah. Rutland was like it was such a big.
I don't know, Chris.
Shift.
I think the political shift to get that Shake Shack in West Hollywood is very similar to Perestroika.
Okay, I think you're. Okay, I'm sorry. I hadn't thought it through.
Yeah,
Matt.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's really, absolutely right.
I'm so sorry. Chris, I hadn't thought it through.
I appreciate it.
That's a one. So when you're going to drama school in Moscow, are you doing plays in Russian?
Or? No. I was in Denmark, but we did this exchange.
Oh, gotcha.
With students there, so they came to us first, and I had this little one bedroom apartment. I had two guys stay with me, and. I was such an idiot. I was 19 years old. So the first thing I thought I was going to do, I'm going to take them to a mall. And I just remember walking them through this horrible place and just seeing their faces going, you could tell they were going, why is he taking us here? Does he really want us to be impressed by this shit? And I just dragged them out. And
sorry.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
This is where we buy a lot of things at the same time that we don't need.
I know. But then the funny thing, when I came back to Moscow, they took me to a mall on the Red Square, which is called Gum, I think. It's still there. But that was also – that was actually interesting because it was basically at the time – empty. So there's like every store had like three items you could buy or look at, but it was so weird and depressing.
Oh, wow. Why was it so empty? It was just people.
It just didn't have anything to sell. They didn't have anything to sell.
It's Perestroika, just like West Hollywood's.
Right, but
Shake
it's
Shack.
Just exactly like Shake Shack.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Chris, I mean.
The parallels are obvious.
Yeah,
I mean,
ridiculous.
If you look at it from any angle, I mean, they're relatively identical.
I know.
So when did you. When did you think that this was something that you could do, like that you could make a living as an actor? If there was not a ton of Danish-centric entertainment, did you think, well, I'm going to go to America?
I don't know. I always wanted to be an actor. I don't know why, but it's you know, I guess as a kid, I always, you know, pretended to be something else. And I guess there's a mix when you're a kid of escapism, you know, into your own world. I was, you know, I spent a lot of time on my own. I was making up all these weird stories where I would act out. Usually I would be some kind of guy who became world champion in something. But then all
world
the
world champion of fly fishing.
The shows I mean I wanted to be an actor and you know, but the shows, of course there were Danish shows as well and Danish actors that was, you know, the ones I looked up to. But the movies I saw and the series like Soap or later was Hill Street Blues and
yeah.
I thought, wow, that's so cool. And then I think I guess in the back of my head the dream was, imagine if I could work in English in England or America. It just seemed like impossible. But I remember actually that whole thing about, you understand how similar we are, how we all we kind of share the same human experience no matter who we are, what country we live in. I saw Once Upon a Time in America with Sergio Leone's movie with De Niro, and I remember yeah. there's this horrible, horrible scene. He's in love with this girl, and he takes her out to, I think it's Coney Island, I don't know, at the Hamptons, and he opens up this hotel, and there's a band playing, and he asks her to marry him, and then she says, that's really nice, but no. And then he does this a horrible thing. But anyway, my point of the whole thing is, I saw that movie, and I identified 100% with this kid who was a gangster, turn-of-the-century New York. And I remember thinking, that's amazing. I mean, how does that work? How can I live in a village of 40 people in Denmark, and I share this guy's everything about him. I understand it. And I just thought, wow, I want to do what he does. I mean, I want to tell stories where people can get carried away. And, you know, because I know nothing. I mean, there's nothing better for me than to watch a great movie, a television show. That thing about the great ones where you're entertained, you have fun, and then at the same time, you kind of, it makes you reflect.
yeah.
on life. So, so yeah, and of course I was a teenager then, but then later on I started, you know, I moved to Copenhagen, you know, when I was 17, I left home and, you know, I moved to Copenhagen, and then I thought I'd apply at the National Theatre School, and then for some, I got accepted, and then suddenly I thought, well, this can actually happen.
What was the primary, what do people do in the village that you're from? Like, is there a primary?
Oh, it's a farming community, yeah. Like, it's a village that's built around a big, old, huge farm, and then these, the houses that used to be for the workers, and now, I mean, my mom was a librarian, so.
That's amazing. Was it livestock or crops, or what are they
both,
farming?
Yeah. The whole thing.
So you could. There was an alternate universe where you're still there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, to be honest, I would love to be, but that never happened. I had jobs at the farm. I would help out, but it was never my passion. But I think it's funny thing how you know you talk about differences in people from different countries. I think there's a much bigger difference between people who grow up in the countryside or people who grow up in a big city. I think you have more in common if you grow up in a big city. You have more in common with someone from London or Paris, sure. or the same for me. I mean, you can relate in a different way. Just to go back to that whole thing about human experiences, kind of.
Are people from your village impressed by what you're doing? Are they like, well, it's nice, but it's not real farming work? I mean,
well, I don't go back. I haven't been back for years and years and years. So I think they're okay with that. I mean, I think the whole thing, I never told anyone I wanted to be an actor. I didn't tell my family until I was accepted because it seemed like impossible. And why? I've always had been that kind of thing. I don't want to say things out loud in case they don't. Which is silly in a way.
In case they don't happen?
Well, it's kind of the opposite. I think if you talk about culture in America, it's kind of the opposite. It's so people always tell you they're going to go and do great, great things, which is great to do because you set yourself goals out loud.
Sure.
And very often they won't happen. Sometimes they do. Where in Denmark, it's kind of frowned upon a little bit. Like, who do you think you are, man? You're just a little kid in a village. You're not going to leave this place.
So you have to just go do it.
You just have to do it. Yeah. Action speaks louder.
I knew I was going to do this, but I didn't want to tell any of you guys.
Yeah, sure you did.
So surprise. But do you envision yourself ever just going back there and living and...
Not there, no. No, I don't know. I'd like to... I mean, who knows? I mean, my wife's from... It's kind of similar. She's from Greenland and she grew up way up north, basically on the ice, and from a small community. So now we live in a city. So I think both of us would like at one point to maybe move out of the city, but who knows?
Yeah, I know. And there's you're in the middle of this thing. I mean, the thing that's happening with your show is a very rare.
Yeah, no,
it's a very rare thing, and the fan base is very rabid. I mean, people love.
Well, don't you think? Because I mean, the last 5 years, the whole being a fan, following shows, I mean, has just changed so much. Because, I mean, I'm not an expert, but it seems like the online community is so intense, and there are so many outlets, there's so many ways to meet and discuss shows or art or whatever. And you know, you have the Comic Cons around the world that are just massive now, and it's kind of gone from being like a niche thing to being like everybody and loves talking about shows and being passionate about shows and being really into it. And it's no longer a weird group of people, but it's everybody.
Well, it's also it went from being entertainment to becoming a lifestyle. Like people, it is a legitimate lifestyle. And I know because I host a show that follows Walking Dead that kind of talks about Walking Dead, and now they're gonna do
yeah, something I heard about
for
that.
Game of Thrones at the same time, which is not surprising to me at all because when you have a show like that has so many characters and so many storylines and so much really intense. I mean, there are scenes from Game of Thrones that still, sometimes when I'm lying in bed at night, like, disturb me, like, are haunting.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising to me. I think people just, throw a lot of their identity into a show.
Yeah.
And they need to talk about it with its, but it is a testament to the sense of community that humans need, no matter what the community is.
Absolutely.
Is.
And I think that also just the fact that with all the streaming, the way you can kind of go and watch the whole story, like 10 episodes in one go, and then you get filled up. I mean, you get really filled up with this story that you have to share it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just, oh, did you see that show? I mean, it's a much bigger thing.
And
I find that I myself, with my daughters, they have the same thing. They connect to shows, and you know, I'll watch a show with my oldest, and we'll get into discussion about it. It's really cool.
What does she like to watch?
We've been watching together Orange is the New Black.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Which with in the beginning, I was a little, because I hadn't seen it, and she said, my friends told me I should watch. Then I said, oh, let's do this. And then I think one of the first scenes was like two girls making out, like, and I was like, oh, and of course she's absolutely fine with this. She's 15, and I'm just being weird now, so
right.
I just not comment on this.
So it's totally fine.
It's totally fine.
Why do you think Jamie is one of the – Jamie's a character that on paper people should root against him.
Yeah.
But they don't. You really love him, even though he does really horrible things. So what is it about him that you think people?
Well, it's good writing, but also he's a human being, and I think for all the characters they're three dimensional. And I think it's one of those things. I usually when people ask me about it, I say, well, what about if you pick one moment in your life where you did something horrible,
mm-hmm.
and then you start the movie about you that moment?
Yeah.
It's gonna take a while before you kind of realize, hey, maybe he's not just a jerk. He's actually a good guy. Or you find out, in Jamie's case, you find out, well, the reason he did push that kid out the window is because he's trying to protect his family. And yes, he is having a weird relationship with his sister, but apparently he actually loves her. It's a genuine thing. It's not just because he's a psycho, but he comes from, I'm not say a good place, but his motivations are clear and you can relate to them. And he has an honesty about him that I think is interesting. And he's smart. I mean, he knows how to use that, his intelligence, when he's confronted with characters that don't like him.
Yeah.
And I think that sense of, you know, I think at the core of him, that whole thing about him feeling everybody has an opinion on him in this world. He's the Kingslayer. So he walks into a room and everyone has a preconceived opinion and he's a bad guy. And I think we can all relate to that. There's nothing worse than when people just assume they know who you are.
Right.
No matter what you say. Well, Chris Hardwick, yeah, you're from The Nerdist. You're a nerd.
Yeah.
That's what you are. You're nothing else. That's what you are. And
right.
That's really
infuriating.
Well,
you'd be correct.
And you'd be correct. But you know what I mean.
Not if you read it.
No.
But the other thing too is that it really puts you in the environment. When you start considering the environmental factors in these characters' lives, it's actually not that surprising. And it's really – I think there's a really interesting family dynamic study of psychology with having this kind of domineering asshole for a father and how three children essentially express – like how they process that and express that, you know, a favorite, a daughter who was not – you know.
Yeah, and then a son who's kind of basically blamed for the death of the mother and the wife.
Right.
I mean, it's not great.
Right.
It's not a great starting point for, you know, to grow up in that situation.
No. So actually, I think everyone probably does surprisingly well with the environment that was put before them.
Yeah.
What do you think it was about him that kind of did he always have that humanity, or do you think he had to learn to grow it?
Well, I think it was always there, and I think that it's one of those funny things that, which is so great about doing a show that lasts for so long, that you actually suddenly you have time to get to know a character, because first in the first season you kind of just see him, his actions. You don't really hear him talk that much about himself, or, you know, other than he just comes up, he shows up, and he's a bit of an arrogant prick.
Yeah.
And you go, ooh. But he might be funny, but he's still arrogant. I think the first, for me, there was a few moments in season one. There's a scene with Ned Stark when Ned Stark comes to King's Landing, where they have a scene where he's actually starting to kind of, he's asking, would you like to thank me, basically, because I kind of saved, you know, the truth. And Ned Stark says, you're just an asshole. Move away. And I think, I mean, I just think it's the writing and it's the character. And then I think with all the characters, you always know there's more to it than just what meets the surface.
Right.
And I knew when I read the script and when I spoke to the guys, they told me about the first three seasons, and they told me how it would end, those three seasons, that arc would end with him in the bathtub with Brienne of Tarth and finally telling the truth about what happened when he stabbed the Mad King. And I thought that's such an interesting journey because, as you said, you see him first and you just go, what a horrible person. And then later you realize, oh my God, he's actually saved hundreds of thousands of people's lives. That's interesting. And it's interesting to start, you know, I just love the first moment when you see him having sex with his sister and he tries to kill a innocent kid. And then he says, the things I do for love. That it just, there's just a conflict with the words and the action, which is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. It's all of the characters are very, very layered. And it's a type of thing where...
Well, like my the worst scene for me in the whole all the seasons was last year when the Princess Shireen was burned on the stake. And you know, that thing you've established, what's his name, the king, her father. See, I should know all these names.
Oh, I just say king guy.
The king guy. But he was kind of, he was the good guy, the reasonable, the true heir to the throne, all that. He was a good guy. And still, he burned his daughter on the stake because he thought that would be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And that's interesting.
And that's really ultimately when you kind of strip everything away.
Everyone's relatable. I mean, who hasn't wanted to kick a kid out the window? We've all been around a kid who's kind of a dick, and you're like, oh, there's a window.
I know.
My sister's back there. She's waiting for it. I mean, I gotta
do it.
You know what I gotta do? What am I gonna do? What choice do I have?
Well, didn't you have like a politician who was talking about his daughter saying...
Oh, you mean Trump?
No, we don't have a politician.
If he wasn't if she wasn't my daughter,
I'd go out
with her.
Yeah, yeah. We have Trump. We have Trump because our country is a reality show, and hopefully he'll get elected, and Honey Boo Boo will be vice president.
Hey,
too young, Chris. Too young.
Too young. Doesn't work. Right. I'm sorry.
Do we have a constitution?
We do. Okay. Yeah, we do. Come on, hashtag America. But I
now
think,
Mama Boo Boo.
But. She's totally qualified.
Yeah, totally.
I just can't wait to see the national pageant.
Do you then feel like here in this town, because this is more Democrat territory here, right? So you would go, wow, why would they vote?
Hollywood's pretty liberal, except for the people
why would you
that
vote
run
for
the money,
Trump?
You know
and
what I mean?
You go Jesus. Back a little in time, you go, wow, but you did elect the Terminator.
Well, I think I don't think California. I think California might be a red state. Actually,
no, it's a blue state.
Are you sure
it's blue? Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think I know you're nodding, but San Francisco and Los Angeles are not representative of the rest of the state, which is
also
a very large state.
But the population density in LA and San Francisco carries the ballot always. There's 13 million people in Los Angeles.
Yeah, for some reason I thought it was closer than people thought it was.
No,
I think there are
large swaths of rural farm, as you can see when you drive up the 5.
Yeah,
and I'm sure the 45 people that live there vote Republican.
San Diego's pretty big. Orange County's pretty big too.
Yeah.
But you know, I think. Ultimately, it is kind of it's a very strange time for us politically because it's just what's happening right now, I think, is even a complete puzzlement to political experts in our country. So I can't even imagine what
well,
it looks like.
You know what's
the
interesting?
Outside.
Oh, well, maybe we shouldn't talk about politics, but I just think it's interesting because it, in a way, on both sides of the aisle, the same thing is happening. People are fed up with there's an anger.
Yeah.
Because there's too much spin, right?
Mm-hmm.
You never really believe what people are saying because you feel that they're just saying what they think you want to hear.
I agree with everything you're saying.
Exactly. So now you have a guy who shows up and he just speaks his mind. And sometimes it's just crazy, but it's almost liberating in a
right
way. And the same on the other side. You have a person, Bernie Sanders.
Bernie,
he believes in what he says. There's no, you kind of believe that he believes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that, I think, is, strangely enough, almost enough. It doesn't seem that people care too much about going into the actual.
They just want to feel like
politics.
They're not being lied
to.
It's
not about qualifications or if they'd be good at the job.
Well, it's interesting, though.
It's about, you know, what.
Do I like
the
it's about feelings. It's about like. Yeah.
Well, and this is a generation that has grown up, you know, like we've had reality television as a part of our culture for 25 years now. And so.
Well, it's the same in Europe. I think the first Big Brother was in Holland. So we've had that whole thing. And I think, but I also think there are, you know, what do you call it? We don't want to spend too much. Everything is so short. Tweets are so short. Everything is like, you want information in just a headline.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's enough.
And that's a fucking problem.
That is a huge problem.
People don't really care. I think most people don't really care what the truth on either side is, as long as it's in kind of a digestible form. So they can go, oh, okay, well, that's all the information I need. Like, no, it isn't. You really should do a little more work and dig a little bit deeper. And that goes not just politics, but also regular news and fandom and, like just people seeing headlines and reacting to headlines without actually looking at the – I mean, I kind of beg people now when I see – if people either come at me aggressively or I see them go at someone else aggressively, I'm like, just have a conversation.
But that's the thing. Now, to get back to Thrones, like, for example, we had that – me and Cersei had a very controversial scene as it was.
Yes.
But then when you explain what you were doing, what we were trying to do, that doesn't matter because it's not a conversation. It's a statement.
Right.
You know, suddenly you realize, well, this is not – nobody really wants to know anything because – it's more exciting just to stay with the
headline,
with the anger,
right?
So whatever you say or do doesn't matter because the truth is the truth.
And it didn't seem like that to you guys when you were making it.
Well, there was never what we thought. We thought it was very complex and very and we were hoping that. And I think actually most people would understand that clearly. This couple had a long history of a very very weird relationship and a situation where that this whole relationship has been secret, so they've had to grab those moments as they did in episode one.
Yeah.
Suddenly, well, we gotta have sex. This is it.
Yeah.
And two persons in extreme pain, they lost a son, and suddenly they just need each other and it becomes a very physical thing. I thought that was really interesting. And I love the fact that there's debate and stuff, but that whole thing about if you started to – I didn't do, but when I saw people online try to argue something else, and you kind of go, whoa, wow, that's dark.
That's not what you were intending.
No, and also you kind of go, well, why – do you like the show? You want to discuss it or you just want to be angry?
When you strip away the filter of everyone's trying to basically take over the entire world, it's about – The thing that's so fascinating is just that simple story of it's a large group of people who are all doing what they think is the right thing.
Exactly.
And that's it. They are all doing what they feel. And it's very similar to what's happening
exactly.
in the political
system.
Exactly
the same.
Everyone has pure conviction that the way that they're going about – that what they're doing is right and the way that they have to go about that to achieve that is justified based on what they think needs to
and
happen.
For some weird reason, the persons that actually are that are out there who are saying, well, listen, wouldn't it be better if we just tried to meet in the middle or like let's try to discuss this – they're just drowned out.
Yeah.
There's absolutely nobody wants to – why would you
usually
talk?
You get killed on your show.
Yeah, you
– the talkers.
Don't. That's horrible. Discussion?
No.
No.
I always want people to have conversations. Even if they don't agree, at least if you try to understand where someone's coming from, it's a more
– it's very difficult to hate someone unless they're complete – but when you actually have a conversation.
Right.
It's difficult to be so – it's the same with the – text emails.
Yeah.
I made the mistake myself. Sometimes you can get really pissed off and you send an email where you suddenly find yourself typing something which when you then read it later, oh, that was a little too much. And something that you would never say to a person's face.
Because you're interfacing with a machine and it's not personal.
And then or you have the people that are suddenly caught being like really aggressive online.
Yeah.
You know, and then someone says, were you the one who said that you wanted to kill all these people because they come from another country? Yeah, well, I didn't mean like that. I was just upset.
That's why I have a rule where I try not to email or
send anything out. When...
I actually have a funny one I did what? Once. This was my second movie. I co-wrote it, and I played one of the leads with me and, you know, Mads Mikkelsen, Danish actor as
well.
Oh,
okay, yeah.
Hannibal, he did.
Yeah.
And we shot this in Iceland. It was very dear to me. I was so invested in this movie. And we got some great reviews, but then there was one paper, and it was just a horrible review. And this is way back. This is the back when you had fax machines. And I sat down and I wrote I hope you burn in hell, you maggot. And I put it in the machine, and I found the number, and I sent it, and I remember seeing it go through, and I was like, oh no. and then I forgot about it, but then 15 years later, I'm a guest host on this show in Denmark on What's Up in the Movies, like that kind of show. And I'm talking to them, and this story comes up, and then they find the journalist, and he said, "Well, it's funny because we had so much fun out of that fax. It was on our wall for 10 years." And I felt like such a. But I learned a lesson. Don't. Take it personally.
The trick is write the thing that you feel and don't send it.
Don't send it.
Read it a day later. See if you still feel that way. Because it's very hard to understand how you're coming off when you're in an emotional state.
Exactly.
Because everything's very, very
or, you know, but you have a wife or...
Fiancé, yeah.
Fiancé, you know, if you ever have a fight or anything, if that thing when you can come into the texts...
Oh, yeah.
Angry texts.
Bad idea.
And then you read them the next day.
I didn't mean it that way.
So bad.
I've actually gotten...
And you always end up the age of 7.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it.
When you get to the point where it becomes like when you're communicating with someone and it just becomes like a name-calling match, it's like, well, you're not even...
And remember what you did 2 years ago?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
The goal should be to understand, not to just bark at people. Yeah. But it's very hard because, you know...
No, it is hard.
You know, people, it's a very weird time. It's a very tumultuous time in human history. And I think people are just... They're carrying around a lot of anxiety all the time. So when they see something or something triggers, you're getting the weight of...
All that.
Everything from the last time that they were able to kind of blow off steam to then.
Yeah.
So it is – I really do try sometimes, and it's very hard.
It is hard.
It's very hard. I know you're on Twitter, but are you pretty active on social media?
No. I'm trying to learn, but I mean, it's funny it's funny how sometimes you get these tweets where people clearly try to get some kind of angry response or something, which is – I think that movie you did just sucked. It's the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. What do you think about that? And then you don't reply. Oh, I know you've read this. Why the fuck don't you reply yet? And then suddenly you're in an Eminem song you know, it's weird. But for the most part, it's, you know, I try to reply sometimes, and you know, as you know, 99% is really nice and interesting. And
were you emotionally prepared for the kind of explosion that Thrones had on the culture? I mean, did you when you were doing it, were you thinking, I think people are probably going to like this show? I mean, do you have any idea?
We had no idea
because you're secluded. You're shooting this in the middle of nowhere.
I know exactly, and it seemed like. It was funny because when you told friends in the business about it, and it was just that classic, because I know that feeling as an actor. There's nothing – you love your fellow friends and actors to do well, but not too well. But you know that thing. It's like, I love it. He's so good. It's, oh, man, really? You got the lead in Star Wars? That's amazing for you. I'm so happy for you. And it's a little hurt. I mean, you're happy for them, but it also hurts a little. You we're human beings.
Yeah.
And so I remember telling friends, I got a really great part on this HBO show. And I could see they were really happy for me. And I could also see that they died a little bit inside. But then they said, so what is it? And they were like, they were fearing to hear like it was like a gangster story or something. And then you said, no, it's this fantasy show with dragons and shit. and
I can't believe that wasn't on the poster, by the way.
And they got so happy. And they were like, that's amazing.
Because they thought it was going to tank.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah,
humans are the only animal that I believe – I'm sure I'll get corrected if I'm wrong. I believe humans are the only animal that process relative gains –
Most other animals just be like, well, I have this, and that's enough, and you have that, so that's fine. I don't need... But humans are the only ones like, hey, I got all... Oh, he's got like 10% more. Fuck.
Suddenly this is not that nice.
Yeah, which is basically Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
It's all about relative gains. All these people have kingdoms, but they want more kingdoms. They want more. They want that one crown. They want that one crown.
It's exactly that. But anyway, so I love the script. I didn't know the books, but I love the scripts, and I also thought this is there's no way you can pull this off because it's so I mean not no way, but I thought it was going to be very challenging for them to just shoot this show and so many characters and how you're going to be able to navigate as an audience. So when it did succeed, I was surprised. And I in Denmark, it only aired on a very small pay channel. Nobody really saw it. So it wasn't until I was told that it was doing really well, of course. But then we came out after season one to Comic-Con in San Diego. And that it kind of made me realize that it was doing more than... Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the – I think I remember the first year you guys were at Comic-Con and wherever you would – if you'd, like, see one of you walk to the Hard Rock Hotel, it's, you know, I mean, like, it was a big
– It was interesting.
Immediate cosplay that year, immediate character cosplay from
but
that show.
But then what's so cool is that –
It's a terrible thing to cosplay as because they dress so warm. And San Diego in July is not
– People don't take that into consideration.
It doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter.
I was actually, but the funny thing, then I was just in, I was in, for the first time ever in Dubai, in the Middle East, they have a Comic-Con there. And I visited that just a few days ago. And it's just the idea that this show is seen everywhere by everyone. Everybody loves it. And you know, you will take pictures with, you know, girls that would come up completely covered in the, whatever you call that thing, from head to toe.
Yeah.
Burka,
yeah, and say, yes, hello, can we have two pictures, please? One for my mother and one for myself. And the first one would be where your hands are just by your side and you just look really serious. And then say, okay, now for me. And then they were like, yeah!
They have to do the respectful one for the parent. And then
yeah, exactly.
The
park, again, you know, we're all the same.
Yeah, ultimately. I mean, and I think that's what's so great about pop culture is that it does... It does
it
unite
transcend,
people.
Yeah,
it does. I mean,
another thing out there which was really interesting, because it's a different culture, the comic book part of the convention was massive, and 80% of the artists were women, which I found was really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of the reverse in our part of the world, right?
Well, maybe that type of thing inspires people in your part of the world to go, oh, that's something that... there are no gender lines. Anyone can be able to do that. And that's what's so great about, you know, the fact that you're from Denmark, and I assume we're around the same age if you reference soap, but the fact that you know what soap is or that you know what Hill Street Blues are, and this was in a time when...
I had one channel on TV. It started at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a...
I mean, yeah, you know what soap is. We're familiar with your pastries. It's really good.
And bacon.
Jess, thank you for that as well.
You're welcome. We aim to please.
Of course.
Oh, if you don't want to talk about this, it's totally fine. But I want to ask you kind of a personal question, which is I read...
Oh, I can't talk about that.
No, not you.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I know everything about you.
Go ahead.
Everything?
It's the... I read that there was alcoholism in your family, and there was in my family.
Yes, my father.
And so I was just curious how that affected you, and did you ever struggle with it, or was it like, did you have the opposite reaction of like, well, I'm never going to?
Well, I think when you experience what that does to your family, and of course to my father first, you know, he killed himself drinking. But it always surprises me when you have an alcoholic, an extreme alcoholic in your family, and then you end up drinking yourself. I mean, for me, it was just like that was the last thing I wanted to go through because I just saw the horror of that. It was. I don't know. I mean, So I basically have used him as a great way of just whatever. I wonder what Dad would do now. I'll do the opposite.
Yeah, that is really fascinating to hear that.
But I mean, and sometimes I'm also being, I have to stop myself from being, I have kids now.
Yeah.
And my oldest is 15, so that whole thing with
the drinking and all that is starting to happen, as you know, as you do in your teens. And I have to stop myself from being too. I'm very worried about that.
Yeah,
which is I think it's a natural thing as a parent, but I think I am a little haunted by my childhood. So I'm trying to remind myself to allow her to go out and basically get shit faced and
make her own mistakes.
Well, make her own mistakes, and hopefully she'll learn from that.
I mean, do you think there's something valuable in protecting your kids to an extent by allowing them to make their own mistakes?
I think it's very. I think one. I mean, my mother is great. And I think the thing that she – what I think she did really well, and I don't think she planned it that way, but she had – you know, parents love their children. That's always – that's, you know, that's a definite that – unless they're complete idiots. But she had – she always managed to have 100% respect for us, for whatever – for the human being we were. I mean, no matter – what we did did not do, she respected our choices. She never questioned or said you shouldn't do that unless you asked for, you know, guidance or whatever. But she was not, she's just very cool that way, that whatever you did was cool because you're a great, I love you, you're a great person, and I respect you and your choices. And that's difficult to do as a parent. I learned that now. It's difficult because you kind of, especially maybe as guys, I don't know, a lot of guys have a tendency to always know what's right. Do you know the thing? You know, you kind of know the answer. Even when you don't know the answer, you
right.
kind of feel that you have to know the answer.
Oh, yeah, right.
And also as a parent. And I have to kind of remind myself all the time that, you know, just let her be.
Right.
Let my kids be.
You don't know the answers all the time.
I don't know anything.
No.
No, but we don't know anything.
No.
I mean, the thing about how, you know, also that, you know, remember when I was a kid, I remember I always thought that at one point I'll grow up and I'll understand. And then you grow up and you realize I'm never going to really understand what it means to be a human being, you know, because, yeah, you gain more experience and, you know, you learn to navigate all the basics, but I'm still sometimes a complete emotional mess.
Sure.
And you would think, I was hoping, you know, there would be a point when I grew up and then I would be, everything would be fine. I would know how to deal with all these things. But it never happens.
Well, because when you're young, you need simple answers for everything. Kids are taught in very simple you know, this or that terms, or there's one right answer. It's very, and I, you know, because I think it's obviously it's hard to explain to young children. Well, things are complex.
Oh, yeah, and I don't think you should. I don't think
you
should.
But when you get older, I think when you start to get older, you're just conditioned to think that there are simple answers for everything. So you go, well, someday I'm going to know what all these answers are. And then, you know, you might talk to your parents and they'll go, yeah, I was just making a lot of that shit up. I had no idea. I just was trying my best and that's the best I could do and I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
But I guess that's why it's important to be okay with kind of falling down sometimes, because that's really where the best lessons come from.
Which is so true. I mean, the failure is great.
Do you have a particular thing in your life at the time where you go, well, this is the worst catastrophe ever, but when you look back, you're kind of thankful it happened because it helped?
I've had a few. But I'm so glad you asked me that question. I need to talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
No, I mean, I don't know. There's a million times when you've done something really stupid. I remember as you know, growing in the 20s, I don't know if you've ever been jealous. If you ever had that experience, I'm sure you have.
I'm sure, yes.
I mean, I don't know if you guys have tried to be jealous.
Once or twice, I try it.
At a girlfriend, right? Yeah. And it's the biggest waste of time. It's so stupid. Because you're so afraid to admit that you're insecure. That
sure.
You just, you know, you just project that onto that other person. Or you yourself are doing horrible things, so obviously she's also out there. I mean that I learned from that's one example, or just things that happen that are just horrible at the moment. You think this is my life is over. I mean, when I was really young, I was very good at you know, I wanted to be a volleyball player. I was chosen to the national team. It was so exciting, and I had an injury. And I really thought my life was over. And then I realized, hey, this is great, because who want to play volleyball the whole life? But it's like, it's funny, because now I was talking to my oldest daughter, and she was like, we were talking about moving one day. And she was just in shock, because right now in her life, the most important thing is her friend. Her friends are the most important thing. And the idea, and even then I can say, well, and I'm not going to say that. But in my mind, of course, you're going to go, listen, honey, in 3 years' time, you have new friends. But that's the way it is, you know.
When you go to college.
Yeah, it all changes, yeah. And then they become the most important. And, you know, but yeah.
But it's what's so interesting to me about that now is that I feel like most kids communicate so much via their devices.
Yeah.
And, you know, my family moved a ton when I was a kid. We moved a lot. And so, but at the time, I remember... Well, you could call that person every once in a while, but there was very little chance you were going to really communicate with someone ever again. But it's so easy to communicate with people now, yeah, via devices, and that's how people do it anyway.
It's also interesting how many people also of our generation that suddenly have reconnected,
yeah,
to old friends or school friends, and suddenly it's, you know, oh, yeah, we're Facebook friends and all that. And I don't know if that's probably good, but it's also...
I'm coming over. What? I haven't talked to you in 25 years.
Over.
Please don't come over.
Don't come over. I don't live there anymore.
That's not where I live. Please.
But it's like, have you ever been to like a reunion thing?
You know, I skipped my reunions and I regret it.
Well,
I really regret it.
I went to one and it was great and it was so much fun. And at the end of the night, we were like, we're going to stay in touch. This is so cool. And I haven't seen them since. I haven't spoken to them since.
It's
and it's absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine. It's, you know.
Your intentions are good. You want to.
No, because you reconnect with something that, I mean, you know, the old truth about like within 2 minutes, people have the same, you know, the whole structure is the same. You know, that guy's the funny guy. That guy is, you know, all that happened. And you're sitting there. At that time, we were like 35 and we hadn't seen each other for 20 years. But you also realize when you leave, there's a reason we're not seeing each other.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not because they're bad people. We're just different.
Just different. And also life, you know? It's like you have a family, you have work, yeah, your intentions are always good, but you still kind of have to deal with whatever's put in front of you each day.
Exactly.
I'm very excited about the new season of Game of Thrones, and I'm glad to hear that you are also excited about the
I'm
new
very,
season of Game.
I literally thought when I read this season, I thought this was the best season. I think it and I'm not just saying that. I think it's the nature of telling a story. When you get to the end, if the build-up has been good, it's so exciting, and I've seen episode one, and it was great.
So when it's all over, how are you going to look back at the experience? Like, what is it? What's it going to be to you?
I think now you kind of realize that this is a once in a lifetime. I mean, because it's you know, it's so big, and it's so many years of your life suddenly. Hopefully, I'll stay in touch with some of the people. It won't be like a, but I'm sure there'll be like Game of Thrones reunions down the line.
Oh, there's always going to be a convention.
Well, we're going to do the variety show hour, the Lannister variety show.
I love
the
it.
Lannister family variety
hour. I can't wait for that.
I love it.
I think
and then like
be
it could be like in the same time slot as the Stark variety hour. Like, I have big plans. I have big plans for this.
And also the Mother of Dragons musical.
That's a beautiful one.
That's
very
best,
pretty.
That's the best part of that. Have you seen the Game of Thrones slot machine?
No.
It is massive. It's the screen is the screen's probably 5 feet long.
No.
So it's like three. You can if you max bet, you bet $5 a spin, and it's three separate games. It's Lannister, Stark, and the dragons. But there's a. There's a dragon wild thing where just, you know, you hear it's Dinklage does the narration.
So cool.
Like, he's like, dragons are coming. And then all of a sudden the dragons fly and like blow fire up the reels. Those are the wilds. It's great. It's a fantastic slot machine.
That might make me actually want to go to Las Vegas.
It's a hoot. The orange is the new black one is weird. Like, why does that exist? But I played it for about an hour because it just loops that Regina Spektor song over and over again.
That's
so I was just like, no, I'll play this. And I'm like, oh, God, less than an hour. Well,
by the way, what do you think is going to happen with, like, virtual reality? Do you think we're going to have shows where you can actually put on a thing and – be in there?
I think, yes, I do think we will have some of that. I think everyone, I think virtual
just
reality.
Because I know you're about to end the show, so I thought we'll, yes, one easy question.
Yes.
What's going to happen in the future?
What's going to happen in the future, and philosophically, how do you think that will affect humanity as a whole?
Exactly.
There are very simple answers. I honestly think, I think what's going to be really interesting to watch is everyone is super VR. Everyone's so, you know, it's a buzzword right now, VR. I do think it will have a cultural impact, and it's going to have an impact on gaming. I think it'll have an impact on sporting events.
And porn.
And porn, yeah, it'll have an impact on porn. There's a, we did a thing on at midnight where it's, this guy had on this, basically like a, this, like it looked like a frog suit, like an old commando frog suit. And he had these like fake boobs, and then this undulating thing that and he was you saw that, and he was in this kind of virtual anime porn, and so, and when I see that I go, yeah, well, people are never going to leave their houses again. But so I think definitely
it's going to be the end of the human race.
It will be the end of the human race. Like, it will be the thing that creates the end of the human race. But I don't think VR is going to be for everything, because ultimately, VR is really cool for a minute for most things, and then after a minute you're like, okay, I get it now. You know, like it's when you're at it, when you're watching a show, like a live theater show, it's fun for a little bit, but then you start looking around, you're looking at the other people that are in the VR shot, you're looking at the ceiling just because it's so like, wow. I think augmented reality is really the thing that's going to have the greatest impact on our culture, because that will change the way people interact with computing. It'll sort of fold computing into our world and sort of turn us into makeshift cyborgs, and also just change the way that people interact with objects and other humans. I think that's going to have the greatest.
Well, how will that
affect
masturbation?
Well, you could do it in just out in the open. You could just see whatever porn you want. Like,
sign me up.
On the subway, you could just see it projected with your screens, like it's, you know, hitting the back of your retina.
I was on the subway in New York.
Yeah, I read about it in the paper. It was a horrible story. I'm sorry about that.
Well, you know,
but you shouldn't do that. Shouldn't do that.
Listen, it looked like they were enjoying it, so I continued. But it was like right around Oscar time, and there was a dude that was on the jammed A train just watching The Revenant on his cell phone.
Oh yeah,
no, really?
Like, of all the fucking movies,
you can watch
choose to watch on your cell phone.
You know, and I think that's I think the other problem with VR is that
I love the work. God damn it.
Look at him.
DP is amazing.
You're getting chewed up by that tiny bear. But I think...
get him some whipped cream. There it is.
I love pocket-sized Tom Hardy. But I think ultimately VR requires a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And I think people don't want to have to... Like, people want to do multiple things at once. So when you're...
Oh, interesting.
When you're watching something in VR...
Takes away the second screen.
It takes away the... You might have to have a virtual second screen that you can fuck around with while you're in other environment. Mm. So I think VR is going to be great for some things. I don't think it's going to get the kind of wide adoption across everything that everyone's scrambling now to shoot VR. I even shot VR a little bit for my stand-up special. And
when is the stand-up special airing?
Oh, well, it's nice that you asked. It's April 30th at 10, 9 Central on Comedy Central.
Cool.
And Game of Thrones?
It's end of the month. I think April, Sunday 25th. Fourth. Yeah.
24th. Game of Thrones is back Sunday, April 24th.
Yeah.
It was really nice chatting with you.
Really nice
and so
you.
Nice. How long are you in town for?
I leave in a few hours.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
We got you on the way to the airport.
Dubai, LA, and then
London.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
What a jet setter. What a jet setter.
The jet lag.
It's wonderful.
He comes. He lives in, from a country that it's light 20 hours a day in the summer. I think he's fine.
So you're saying his melatonin levels are different?
I think he's adjusted
than everyone else.
God, let me tell you, the week I spent in Reykjavik, I wanted to kill myself
every night to find a, just like, what time zone am I in? I have no fucking idea.
Just knock me out.
Well, thanks for being here.
No, it's great.
It's good to see you, and enjoy your burrito, everyone. The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.